Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 258. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mosques, the Silk Road, and terracotta warriors as we go to Xi'an, China. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have four news stories for you. I know that's more than usual, but this was a weird week for news. In the weirdest and the saddest news story this week, the body of a young man, Devontae Tisdale, was found in a suburban street in Boston, and the police have ruled that he fell from a plane. He actually had tried to stow aboard a plane and apparently fell out of the wheel well when the plane was landing at Logan Airport. The last time we know that somebody stowed away aboard a flight in the U.S. was April 14th, 1972, and that also ended very poorly because, again, the person tried to stow away in a wheel well and froze to death. And then speaking of making exits from planes, a man in San Jose, possibly suicidal, tried to open up the cabin door of a Continental Airways jet flying from San Jose to Houston, forcing the plane to divert to Albuquerque. We don't recommend that. And then in Abu Dhabi, trying to reenact snakes on a plane, they found a passenger who was trying to sneak four snakes, two parrots, and a squirrel inside his luggage onto the plane. And yet, the best quote this week for me comes from our fourth story, which is, passengers on a Qantas flight that was delayed were told eventually, "We're sorry for the delay, but we're having problems loading the cheetah, and we have to do it very carefully." They waited another half hour before they were told the cheetah was not cooperating and was taken back off the plane for a later flight. For links to all four of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Brooke, who's coming to us from Los Angeles to talk about Xi'an, China. Brooke, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And just in case somebody doesn't know what we're talking about, can you put Xi'an on a map? Actually, we should spell it, too, because I'm not sure from my pronunciation, people are going to know what we're talking about. So,
sure. It's spelled X-I apostrophe A-N, and it's in the Shanxi province. It's probably an hour flight west of Shanghai.
And what led you to go to Xi'an?
Well, my husband and I had decided to go to China, and we had 2 weeks. Unfortunately, we would have loved to have had more time. And obviously, Beijing was the city we wanted to go to, and it was during the World Expo, so we went to Shanghai as well.
Oh, okay.
So when my husband and I chose Xi'an, we were familiar with terracotta warriors, but we didn't know much else about the city, so we thought that would be an interesting experience. So after we went to the expo in Shanghai, which was quite crazy, we decided to tone it down a bit and move on to Xi'an.
We've mentioned the terracotta warriors a couple of times, so we ought to cover them first, just in case we have people who don't know what we're talking about. And this is where they found basically a whole army made out of terracotta or made out of pottery.
Exactly.
Basically buried out there in the western part of China.
Yes, it's a fascinating story. The first emperor of China had, during his reign, decided that in the afterlife, he wanted to bring his army with him. So basically, he commissioned, or I guess not commissioned, he had all of the local people in his kingdom build these warriors. They're fantastic. They're about six and a half feet tall. They have different faces, different expressions. There are different type ranks, you know, obviously depending on the military. He had them build a complete army, which was discovered in 1974 by some people in the village who were looking for water, and they stumbled on one of the pits. Now, I guess the best way to describe it is there are three pits, and when I say pits, they're more like airport hangars. They're huge. Probably the entire complex is about 15,000 square kilometers.
Oh, my.
And they've been excavated. It's massive. I mean, you could park airplanes in these structures.
You mean square meters?
Square meters, yes. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And yes, about 15,000 square meters, I believe, is the largest pit. And within the pits, there are these corridors just filled with these different warriors. And I'd seen pictures, and you can't possibly understand it until you see them in person. Originally, they were painted, and obviously because of time, the paint has worn off, but they're absolutely fantastic. And when you go visit the warriors, they aren't right in Xi'an. They're probably about 45 minutes outside of the city. So you can hire a car, which is what we did, and it's probably the easiest thing to do, to take you out there. And you can also hire guides. I would really recommend visiting the museum that's attached to the pits, because it gives kind of a history of the Terracotta Warriors, how they were found, the excavation process. They're actually still being excavated now. And the interesting thing is the first emperor wanted to bring these warriors with him in the afterlife. In addition to that, they say that he actually wanted to bring his entire kingdom with him. So they've discovered these warriors, but there's also a tomb where he's supposedly buried, and they haven't been able to excavate that yet because they think it's booby-trapped. But they think that there's an entire kingdom in there buried with him. So when they're able to excavate it, it's going to be really fascinating.
From what I was reading, this is from about 210 BC or so.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So 2,000 plus years old.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think there are about 6,000 warriors total. In addition to warriors, there are horses. They have chariots. The warriors originally had weapons with them, but most of the weapons were made of wood. And so, obviously, the wood disintegrated over time.
Mm-hmm.
But the warriors are still, other than being discolored now, they're in fantastic shape. They're really breathtaking.
And now we've just exhausted everything I know about Xi'an. And certainly the reason that I wanted to go there as well. But what else is there to see besides that?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, because that's pretty much all we knew about Xi'an when we got on the airplane. And fortunately, actually, when we had been in Beijing, we had met some people who had recommended Xi'an as well. So it says, wow, there are so many different things to see there. I have to say, my favorite thing in Xi'an is the Muslim quarter.
Oh, okay.
Actually, the oldest mosque in China is in Xi'an, and there is a large Muslim community there. It's a minority community, but it's a Muslim community. And there's a Muslim quarter where it's made of lots of small streets with food vendors. You can buy the absolute most amazing food, lots of kebabs and sweets, juices, dried fruits, and there's lots of bargaining there. You can pretty much buy anything you want, whether it's, you know, a reproduction of the Terracotta Warriors or purses or jade. But the Muslim quarter is really fascinating because you don't feel like you are in China. I spent some time in Turkey, and I very much got a feel for like I was in Turkey when I was there. Another interesting thing about Xi'an that I hadn't known was that it was actually the start of the Silk Road.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are so many different influences on Xi'an because of that. You know, obviously the Muslim quarter is one of those. And as I mentioned, the Great Mosque is also in the Muslim quarter. the oldest mosque in Xi'an, and unfortunately I didn't get to go in, but it's absolutely breathtaking. It was built, I think, in the mid-600s during the Tang Dynasty.
And just to double-check, you couldn't go in for time, or it's not welcome because you're not a... Because I've run into both.
Right. We couldn't go in because of time, and okay. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if we would have been allowed to have gone in.
Okay.
But just for us, we unfortunately couldn't go in because of time. But it's a really wonderful area to just kind of get lost in for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
Xi'an's a very small city, and this is obviously a small part of the city, but it is an interesting area where you really can get lost among the vendors and the shops and kind of find yourself in a food coma a couple hours later, I would say. My husband is much more adventurous than I am when it comes to eating, and he had a fantastic time there, I think. He sampled pretty much everything, and I became a bit braver as the afternoon progressed. But for anyone who's a bit adventurous and likes food, that is definitely a place to visit.
Now, my guess is because you're further east, you're getting closer to Sichuan cuisine, and certainly not the seafood that you would be getting on in Shanghai. Am I close, or is it vastly different because of the influence of the Silk Road and some of the other cultures that have had their influence on Xi'an?
Actually, no, I'm not sure if it's the dumpling capital, but dumplings are very popular there. And from what we saw, you could pretty much get any type of dumpling made any way you want. You know, we had spent some time in Shanghai where the soup dumplings are very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Xi'an, really, I think it's kind of make your own dumpling. You really have a lot of options, and that's what it's known for. There are lots of fruits there as well. If you're wandering around the street at 1 a.m., you'll find many fruit vendors, juice vendors, sweet vendors, but dumplings are really quite popular there.
Okay. And then what else stands out for you with Xi'an or the area around there? I don't know how far out of town you got other than to the Terracotta Warriors.
Well, you know, Xi'an's very interesting in that there's a wall around the city. So you have the city of Xi'an, and it's been developed quite a bit over the past few years. You know, I think, gosh, probably the population has grown a few million just in a couple of years. And when you get outside of the city walls, you really see the expansion. Every street you walk down or you ride a bike down, there are new buildings being built, there are cranes. You feel as though a city is being built around you, which I found fascinating. But within the city walls, it definitely has a different feel. It has a feel of an older city. You know, one of the most enjoyable things, I think, to do in Xi'an is to actually walk around the city wall. And the city wall has been restored. It's absolutely amazing. And particularly during the summer and the spring when the weather is really nice, people rent bicycles and will ride bikes all around the entire city wall. And it gives magnificent views of the bell tower, which is in the middle of the city, and out to the newer part of Xi'an as well.
You talked about the weather being good in spring and summer. What time of year were you there?
We were there in the summer, and actually, unfortunately, when we were in Xi'an, the day that we went up to the wall, it was raining, and they usually won't rent bikes in the rain because it's still quite slick.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really just a wonderful, it's not a wall that you can walk around because it's huge, but it just provides fantastic views and gives you a good sense of the history. I believe it's one of the best preserved walled cities in China.
And then what else would you recommend that we see while we're there?
I think also there is a big wild goose pagoda, which is in the newer part of Xi'an, and the bus system there is very easy. You have to pay attention, obviously, because the bus drivers are quite kind, but most don't speak English, so you do have to stay on your toes and have an idea where you're going. But outside, probably about 20 minutes outside the main walls, there is a huge park area, and behind it, this big wild goose pagoda, which is actually attached to a functioning Buddhist temple. And in the 1500s, there was an earthquake, and the pagoda lost a couple stories, and it actually leans a few degrees to the west. So when you're looking at it, the pictures are really fascinating. You almost have a feel of a Leaning Tower of Pisa, probably not to the same degree, but it is really interesting. But outside of the pagoda and the temple, there is a massive water show. It almost gives you a sense of being in Las Vegas at the Bellagio, but much larger. It's said to be the largest water show actually in Asia, and probably a few times every day I have the water and music accompanies it, and people actually walk through the fountains, which is really interesting. It almost seems like somewhat of a central point that, you know, you'd go and meet your friends with the water fountain for the water show. And then obviously the Wild Boot Pagoda and the temple are behind that. And I think that's a really nice way to spend an afternoon walking around there.
And you say it's a wild goose pagoda, and the connection to wild geese, I'm still on a wild goose chase here perhaps, but I haven't quite caught why it's a wild goose pagoda.
Well, that's the name of it, and okay. I believe there are some legends as to why it's actually called the Wild Goose Pagoda, one of which I think has to do with some monks being at this temple and being very hungry, and these were monks who ate meat, and they had been praying for some food, and I guess a goose came there, fell from the sky, and landed there. It had died, and they thought it was a sign for them to stop eating meat, and then they built a pagoda there. That's the legend that I have heard. So,
okay.
That was the only story about the Wild Goose Pagoda, but it's a fantastic structure and just really interesting walking throughout the temple because it is a functioning Buddhist temple. So you, as you're visiting the area, you see them going about their daily business. So it is a tourist attraction, but it doesn't have the feel of a tourist attraction.
Anything else in terms of sights that we should see then also while we're there?
In the center of the city, there is a fantastic bell tower, the raised bell tower, and there's a traffic circle around it, and it's absolutely stunning, particularly at night with the lights and all the cars around it. And it's an interesting blend of ancient China in a modern day because there is such a large traffic circle around it. It's not particularly friendly for pedestrians to walk around that center. So there's a subway that is basically the infrastructure that they have there is for a subway, and they say that they're going to build one in Xi'an within the next 10 years. But you have to go underground to get to different parts of the main street where the bell tower is. And there, if you go up to the bell tower, you can see a Starbucks on one side, and then you can see a McDonald's, and you can see a big mall. So it's an interesting blend of having this bell tower in the middle of quite a bit of chaos and, you know, a very modern city.
Okay. What was your biggest surprise? You say you went only knowing about the Terracotta Warriors and the same situation I would be in, at least before you and I talked. So what caught you off guard?
You know, I think I was a bit surprised by how lively the city was, particularly at night. The bell tower is actually pretty much in the center of the town. And my husband and I wandered off to some side streets, and people were sitting outside at tables. This is probably pretty late at night, having dinner. There were lots of street vendors. There were these small markets going on. And there was just so much energy there that I didn't expect. I thought it would be somewhat of a sleepier town because it is a smaller city.
Only by Chinese standards, of course.
By Chinese standards, exactly. Exactly. In the U.S., it probably would not be considered such a small town, but it was. I think I also do have a bit of a, not a warning, but if people, most people usually take the train either from Beijing to Shanghai or take the train going back, at least in one direction. And the train stations, if someone has ever experienced a train station in China, is rather chaotic. And Xi'an is no exception. You cannot buy tickets for trains online. You have to either go to a train station or go to an office that specifically sells train tickets. And it can be very complicated trying to explain the date that you want to leave on and the cabin that you want to stay in if it's a soft sleeper, but I do recommend if you take an overnight train to take a soft sleeper and to stay on one of the higher levels. My husband and I lucked out and were able to get a cabin that had two beds. We've been told that most had four, and it was pretty luxurious for Chinese train standards, I would say. But the train stations are extremely chaotic, lots of pushing and shoving, and one has to allow oneself a bit of extra time once you arrive at the train station to get settled. Find your train.
Now, do you speak Chinese, I should say, first of all, Mandarin or?
No. Okay. My husband and I learned a few words, and that is certainly one thing in China. For any city in China, really, I would recommend that if somebody wants to go somewhere, he or she has it written down in Chinese characters.
Sure.
Most people that we encountered didn't speak English or read English for that matter, so you can't necessarily point at something in a book and say, please take me there, because most people wouldn't understand it.
Yeah, I think I've shared the story on this show before where I confidently got in a cab in Shanghai and said the Marriott and just got a blank look. So until I could recall the Chinese name of the hotel, which fortunately I could remember after a minute there or so, I wasn't going anywhere. So
it is very tricky, and I also discovered that hand gestures you would use to say, yes, you're going in the right direction, or no, you're not, don't mean anything there either. So it is very tricky to communicate.
Now, you got there, you opened up your guidebook to try and figure out where to go. Did you find some of the things that the guidebook recommended stand out as being something you would not necessarily recommend, or did you find things that were missing from the guidebook that you would recommend people go to?
You know, I think we actually had a pretty comprehensive guidebook, so we were there for about 2.5 days, and I would have preferred a few extra days because there were quite a few things that we didn't have a chance to see. And as I said before, you know, most people go to Xi'an because they want to see the Terracotta Warriors,
right,
and don't really know much else about the city. So it is great to invest in a good guidebook and to really afford yourself some extra time there just to kind of wander around the city and get a feel for it and to enjoy all of the amazing food.
Okay. If you think about the one picture that captures that area for you, you're standing there, you got your camera out, you're looking at what?
Gosh, you know, I really would say the Muslim Quarter.
That's interesting
for me because it was so different from anywhere else we visited when we were in China. And I think also because it was one of my favorite parts of the city and it was such a surprise, that really embodies the trip. Obviously, people do think of the Terracotta Warriors, so one would picture a Terracotta Warrior when thinking about Xi'an, but the Muslim Quarter really did stand out.
And I'm getting the picture you're not necessarily talking to about the mosque, but more the side streets and the street vendors and that sort of thing.
Exactly. Okay. And just the energy of people riding their bikes and trying to avoid traffic and trying to maneuver, holding a kebab in one hand and a juice in the other and hoping you're not going to get run over by someone on a bike behind you. But it had a great energy about it, and it really stood out. It was my favorite part of visiting Xi'an.
When you were mentioning riding the bikes on the wall, I think I looked up while you were talking and saw that the wall, you said, was not an easy walk. I think it's about 12 kilometers around in circumference. So I certainly see why you're recommending the bike.
Yes, well, and they also have golf carts, too. Someone is particularly lazy or isn't comfortable riding a bike, a golf cart is also an option. But that can certainly take a few hours. It's a nice way to spend an afternoon.
Who is the most memorable person you met?
I would have to say our driver to the Terracotta Warriors. And there are a number of ways to get out there. As I had mentioned, we hired a driver.
And was that very expensive?
You know, it was about $30.
Okay.
We negotiated. I think pretty much as with everything in China, you're expected to negotiate. We were a bit hard pressed for time, so it made the most sense for us. And you could probably do it for considerably less if you take a tour. But oftentimes on those tours, you'll stop at a jade factory or
absolutely
two.
Sure.
It's not as direct, but he was quite a character, and he showed up in an official Communist Party limousine with the flag and all. So we felt very special being driven around by him.
Interesting. And you're kind of in the middle of China. When did you feel the closest to home, and when did you feel the furthest from home?
I would say when we were at our hotel, I felt both the closest and the furthest from home.
Okay.
Throughout in the other cities that we visited in China, we stayed at small B&Bs, and this was the one time when we stayed in an actual hotel because it was in the center of town. And it was very Western. It had all of the comforts of home, but skewed a bit towards China. For example, we had internet, but only in certain parts of the lobby. And we were actually given an upgrade to a suite the first night. And then the next night, we were told, we don't really understand why, that we had to move because somebody else came who needed to have our room. So it was a very interesting mix of feeling like we were very much at home, yet there were so many differences that made us remember, wow, we're definitely in China too. But the entire city really, it was very friendly, very welcoming. I felt safe walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a really enjoyable, almost enjoyable break from the larger cities.
Well, and statistically, I'm sure you were much more safe than in walking around in any U.S. city from a crime point of view. One thing that you saw that you just had to laugh and say, only in China or only in Xi'an?
Gosh, I would probably say right outside of the city walls, we were trying to get back into the city from the area where the Wild Goose Pagoda was, and there were no sidewalks. We literally had no place to walk, and we had always been told that traffic in China can be very dangerous, and the best way to cross the street would be to follow someone who was from the area.
Absolutely.
When we were trying to get back, and we found someone and literally just latched on to the man and crossed the street, and I thought, my gosh, you know, this definitely would never happen to me back at home. And I think Xi'an, more than the other cities, really was more difficult to maneuver. I think Beijing and Shanghai have more sidewalks, and they're a bit more pedestrian friendly.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it definitely can be a little bit dangerous crossing the street in Xi'an.
Okay. Before you go to Xi'an, one thing you should know and one thing you should pack.
You should definitely know that you will be walking a lot.
Okay.
So I guess to go along with that, you should definitely pack a good pair
of shoes. Good pair of walking shoes, okay.
Mm-hmm. Good pair of shoes, especially if you want to take a bike ride along the city wall or even walk for a bit of it as well.
Okay. Anything else we should know before we pack our bags and head to Xi'an?
You know, Xi'an is really more than the Terracotta Warriors. And they're, you know, they're going to build a metro. And, you know, I really hope that obviously people do visit it because of the Terracotta Warriors, but there's so much more to see in the city that I really hope people give it a bit more time.
Mm-hmm.
Just going off to see the Warriors and then heading out, because it really is a fantastic city. And it's so different from any of the other cities in China because of the Muslim influence, I think.
Final two questions. Mm-hmm. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Xi'an when what?
You really know you're in Xi'an when you are trying to balance your food and not get hit by a bike.
And if you had to summarize Xi'an in three words, what three words would you use?
I would say not just warriors.
Not just warriors. Excellent. Brooke, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your wonderful trip to Xi'an.
Thank you for having me.
In news from the community, I forgot to mention last week that the Amateur Traveler is actually up for a podcast award. Not this show, not the audio show, but the video show. If you're interested in voting, you can go to podcastawards.com. I am planning on being completely crushed by shows such as Dig Nation, but you can vote anyway if you like. But I do thank those of you who nominated the show. And then I had heard this week, I got an email from Randy in Annapolis, who had this comment on the Glacier National Park episode. Love your podcast, longtime listener. Glacier National Park is a wonderful place to explore. Just wanted to note that going to the Sun Highway typically does not open until the week of July 4th. It depends on snowfall and efforts to clear it. The week I was there in 2007, it opened July 2nd. Timing was good for me as I arrived on July 1st. Much of the very popular Hidden Lakes Trail near Logan Pass Visitor Center was snow-packed and icy, but still quite wonderful in early July. Wildflowers were wonderful below the snow line. If you check the Glacier National Park website in the early summer, you'll see the frequent updates on the status of plowing and opening of the Going to the Sun Road. Thanks so much, Randy. That's a very good tip to know. A while back, I heard from Eric, that's E-R-E-K, who said, "Thank you for your podcast. I just listened to the Seattle podcast and became nostalgic. I used to live in Port Townsend, Washington, and have since moved back east to New Hampshire. I'm currently listening to the Biking Across Central America, loving it, and it reminded me of my friend Doug Guzelman, who biked across the Amazon in South America. I think he'd love to talk about it. He has a website called AmazonPilgrim.com. He blogged throughout his trip. I hope you enjoy it. We loved following along with his adventures. Thanks again for your podcast. I look forward to listening to more." Well, thanks for your comment, but at least for this week, there is no more, as we're going to bring this episode to a close. Feel free to rate The Amateur Traveler on iTunes. Give us a review. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.